I wanted to ask you about the three different models in general and how they got started and what the idea was about building them.
Okay. Chapter of the book. Did I do that or not?
No.
Okay. Let me go through this a little bit, and then I'll send you a chapter or so from the book, which you can read but not quote,
Okay.
because the book is it's in proof now.
Sure, certainly.
It's my third proof. And that's pretty well discussed in there. At some length, but I'll just sort of go through it rather quickly.
Okay.
The strong focusing was invented by, well, first Christophilus, but then ignored, and then by Courant and all, and that then it got pursued there. That was about in 1952, and that was at Brookhaven. And so the interest grew, particularly in the Midwest, where the accelerators had been, there was a Berkeley machine, Bevatron and so on, and the machine at Brookhaven, there was a Cosmotron, and people in the Midwest wanted to get into that field, but they didn't really have a lab to do it. That's why Mira happened. And that's discussed in a lot of detail there. But in any case, so the way to do that was, of course, to start looking at the design of machines, which is what happened. And there was a group formed of people from various Midwestern universities, primarily at the instigation of Don Kirst and probably Jerry Kruger, too. So they got people like Jones and Terwilliger from Michigan and Frank Cole from Iowa. They got Keith Simon, who at that time was at Wayne State University and had written a textbook on mechanics, and quite a few people like that. They began to look at the design of machines, and see, Jones and Terwilliger had worked on a synchrotron at Michigan. And so the idea of what was difficult was the injecting it with some rather low energy where the magnetic fields were very low, and then accelerating to some higher energy where fields are high. And that turns out to be a fairly difficult magnet build, but you can do that. Let's see, the sort of the momentum ratio, which is the way to think about that, is like in typical proton synchrotrons is about 40, something like that. The question was, you know, and what was holding everything up was taking the longest time to do the acceleration was the just changing the magnetic field. So people ask, is there some way that we could configure them? Cyclotrons, after all, do start at low energy and accelerate to their final energy. So there's some precedence for wanting to do that. In any case, the idea came up of injecting one part of the aperture and then transferring to the other part of an aperture, so you have a magnet that has both high field and low field. But that kind of doesn't work. The transfer is, because nobody knew how to do that. So then the idea, well, maybe they have one magnet sort of like a cyclotron where you inject it at one energy, within the same aperture you can accelerate to the final energy. And that's what an FFG is.
Okay.
But the focusing and everything is rather different. The systematics are rather different from the conventional alternating gradient synchrotron. So that means that a whole new area had to be looked at. The question was, would those work? There turned out to be two kinds of these fixed field machines invented. One with one got the vertical focusing basically by having reverse fields in all the neighboring magnets, so that the particle on the average was deflected around the circle, but it was deflected outward part of the time also. So it's required a lot more field strength, and actually made the machine larger than was desirable. But that was called a radial sector machine.
Mm-hmm.
So the first model was the radial sector machine that was built, assembled at least in Michigan. Michigan built various pieces and parts of it. Purdue built the magnets. I don't know. Well, anyway, everybody sort of collaborated at that point.
Okay.
And then the next one was the spiral sector machine, which was invented by Kirst. Simon invented the FFAG, the radial sector machine. And Kirst came up with the idea of a spiral sector machine, which essentially had alternating focusing because of the edge angles. You can think of it that way, although there's a lot more subtlety to it than that. Anyway, so the second model was a small model to test that concept. So that was built and operated in 57, I believe, fall of 57. I was quite involved with that one. But there were all these other problems of making beams live a long time, with beam lifetime, space charge, dense beams, that kind of thing, and testing out these RF, more carefully these RF schemes and stacking and so on, a whole host of things. And that's the reason for the models.
All right.
Well, to test everything to make sure it works.
Yeah. So what was the...
But you might notice that as far as the synchrotron was concerned, Brookhaven first built a small, used electric fields to deflect the particles. They built a small synchrotron with electric focusing to test it before they built the AGS. The Bevatron, there was a test model built, which was then moved to Caltech and used as a electron synchrotron.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a history of building test machines to test concepts.
Yeah.
And that's what that was all about.
Yeah. So what was the relationship with the different models and then the proposal for the National Accelerator?
You mean to the final MIRA proposal or what?
Yeah, to get Fermilab or what became Fermilab.
Oh, Fermilab. That's a long, long story. You said the relation of those models to each other?
Yeah, is there one?
Well, they were all built by the same organization and pretty much the same group of people.
But were the plans to build the three different models, did that have anything to do with the Fermilab proposals and the things like that?
Oh, that Fermilab was long in the future at that point.
Okay.
There was nobody, actually, all, people weren't even sure that the Brookhaven 30 GeV machine was going to work.
Okay.
So, anything like a couple hundred GeV was just, no one even said that. The reason for that was that people sort of tried to look at how things scaled, and they kind of chose the wrong thing. They chose the had to do with the precision of locating the magnets and what that does to you. And people, but then it turned out you could solve that problem. So so that made the 200 dB machine look very attractive.
Okay.
Before that got solved, that was, people wouldn't even talk about it. Anyway, the relationship to, eventually, as you know, the higher energy machine won out, and that's reasonable, that's actually a very reasonable result from my perspective. I don't, I never objected to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think physics has moved a lot farther because of that. And there was the other thing about colliding beams, but it turned out that the environment for these FFAGs was not very conducive to colliding beams. Let me just leave it that way.
Mm-hmm.
There was not a good way to do experiments. It's sort of a technical detail, but it is quite important. And when the Mira proposal came down, the last one was turned down, there were a number of programs that were continued because they would be useful for the 200 dB project, or what became Fermilab.
Mm-hmm. And what happened to the other models, aside from the FFAG, that went into Tantalus?
What happened to them? Good question. They're probably lying around the lab out there somewhere, pieces of it. Or they might have been junked, I don't know. Or maybe, I think there are some of the magnets, I think a magnet from each one went into the Smithsonian, unless I'm mistaken.
Hmm. Okay.
But your wife Keith might know the answer to that. I don't.
Okay.
Can you just hold on a second? I've got another call.
Sure.
And I'll be right back, okay?
Yep. We're just talking about where the other two models went.
I really don't know, but you might ask. Esther might know. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'll bug her. That's all the questions.
I left in 1970. And
okay.
A lot of water over the dams.
Yeah. Well, that's all the questions I have for now.
Okay.
But thanks for your help.
Okay, well, anytime you want to call, just give a call.
Okay, and do you have my email address?
I've got an email from you, so I have it.
Okay.
And just a second.
Sure.
I think what I wanted to give you was a copy of Frank Cole's thing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, I suppose I could give you I'll make that available to you, okay?
Okay.
I have a way of doing that. It'll be a place you can, a website you can get to.
Okay?
All right, nice to talk to you.
All right, likewise. Thanks, Fred.
Bye-bye.